Hello and welcome to AFP. My name is Devang Desai and I'm joined by the usual suspects, David Goss and Nick Andrade. On today's show, we chat big changes at FC Dallas, a huge week in the Canadian Championship, plus all of your questions on the mailbag Ask AFP. Gentlemen, how are we doing? Nick, welcome back. Where were you? The wilderness? The woods? Both?
I went my first ever trip out west to Alberta and Calgary and Banff and Lake Louise, and it was absolutely beautiful. I couldn't believe it. It was an amazing experience for me, one that I'll never forget.
Can I ask a question? Because I never know. Is it with an N or an M that it's Banff or Banff?
That's also a question that I had, and it is an N, but it is pronounced Banff, but I don't get
it. No one knows. Yeah. I think the truth is no one knows, and no one's ever been put on the spot like this.
Was it as, because I've heard it's like the best national park ever.
It is, like, pictures don't do it justice. Like, it is incredible. I also, like, climbed some steep rocks, and I was very proud of myself at the end because I was exhausted, and it was nice. Like,
a
steep
hills,
and I was climbing and I was almost falling down, and I felt like I was Bear Grylls or something. It was pretty cool.
Oh man, didn't have Bear Grylls reference on my bingo card for today's AFP.
Sorry.
I appreciate that.
I had a heartwarming moment looking at Nick's Instagram and realizing he and I have the same Uniqlo shirt. Which really, like, what are the odds, right? What are the odds that two people could order the same shirt from an online boutique?
The odds of are incredibly high. I've seen, like, the Uniqlo is, like, my only, because I'm a smaller man, so it fits my nice physique. And I noticed that a lot of people also have Uniqlo. But you are incredibly tall, so I don't know what's going on with you.
And this might be one of the best ads possibly for Uniqlo in history, the best jeans I've ever had from, like, that kind of store ever. Like, I still go there for my jeans.
100%.
So yep. For big and tall, go to Uniqlo, home of Roger Federer as well. David, please tell me you have a clothing brand to represent as well.
No, mine would be Uniqlo, so we can't diversify there. I pretty much wear it exclusively, or I wear free stuff from MLS. Those are, like, the only two things I wear at any point.
Free stuff is always... it's always a huge element of the wardrobe, especially in COVID time, because who do you have to see, right?
Right.
So free stuff rules the day.
It's actually been pretty disorienting lately because I've seen people. And so...
And what are you wearing? What are you wearing?
I have zero idea.
Yes, guys.
Like, all of my quote-unquote nice shoes, I, like, pulled them out and they're a mess because they've been, like, crammed in somewhere for 18 months and covered in dust. So I'm just going, like, nicer sneakers with a little bit more of a dress-up look. I basically wear Uniqlo joggers as dress pants constantly. Because I bought all of the khaki ones. So that's my look.
My only two pair of pants fit me now since the pandemic started. So whenever I have to go out and wear something nice, I try to slip on jogging pants. So then my girlfriend's like, no, you need to wear better pants. I'm like, I don't have any pants left. Sorry.
Nice.
Jeez. Well, that's an inside view into that relationship. And we hope everything is going well. Nick at home. I'm joking.
This is a great soccer podcast today, by the way, guys.
You're right, Nick. Back to soccer, though. How are you doing Liverpool-wise? I was right. I called them a contender. I called them one of the better teams in the EPL, and they are. So I expect an apology right away.
Yes, I'm sorry for I 100%. I don't even know what I just, you are amazing. You are great.
Nick doesn't even care. You.
Yeah, I know, but Liverpool's doing great. I was a little worried during the week because of the game with AC Milan. I was also cheering extra hard because I felt in my head that David was really cheering hard for Milan. So I was like,
really?
Trying to channel. Yeah, you're the Italian soccer guy, I think. Anyway,
I am.
So you automatically cheer for all the Italian soccer teams, right?
Ooh, well, I definitely don't cheer for Lazio, so I don't cheer for all of the Italian
soccer.
Nobody, super fascist.
Yeah.
pro fascism is one of the reasons David chose them as well. Yeah.
So you know, when they win, I'm happy, and they've been winning a lot lately, so it's great.
Some may say that we forgot about the Champions League last week, but we didn't, David. We had so much else to get to. We're going to talk about Champions League later and also in the Patreon exclusive. But quickly, David, your week in soccer.
Yeah, it pretty much just started with the title race for Arsenal, right? Like, the race is on now.
So there are two clubs in history that I think have lost the first three games and went on to win the league, and one of them is Burnley, and we beat Burnley. So I think we all know where this is going.
Transitive right, property.
Before we get to the, I'm still basking in that just horrific 1-0 win. We play dirty football, and it's working right now. Before we get to the show, a reminder, we are on patreon.com for more Uniqlo banter. You can find us on the Discord. There's a lot of it. Shouts to SH, our latest Patreon subscriber. They want to hear about Uniqlo. They want to hear about Liga MX. They want to hear about soccer all around the world. So if you do too, join us on Patreon. You get the show ad free. You get it early as well. Plus, you get to join that Discord I was mentioning and all of those bonus episodes that are coming your way, including more Europe talk this week as well. So head on over to patreon.com/afootballpodcast and join today. When we come back, we head to MLS. Big changes at FC Dallas. Luchi Gonzalez out, plus Sebastian Giovinco back to TFC? ? We hit that next after the break. Welcome back to AFP. The big news in MLS land: FC Dallas and Luchi Gonzalez parting ways. A bit of a sad story, to be honest. I've talked about FC Dallas as an outsider. David, you obviously know a lot more about the inner workings, and we'll talk about that. But this was the team that produced the best talent. They ended up appointing the guy that shepherded a lot of that talent out the door into to great things. And it seemed like a nice fit, and maybe not the perfect fit in terms of future ambitions. And now with FC Dallas probably out of the playoff race, I think it's about time for them to call it on this season. They've made the move. David, your thoughts on this? I think maybe before you begin, I think this is a move for them that takes them down the track of a lot of other MLS clubs in terms of the win now ethos, as opposed to what they've been developing all along.
Is it though? Like, do they have that? That's the problem. And I think the first reaction to this is, okay, this is a team that expects to be in the MLS Cup playoffs every year. They're currently outside those spots. They are now trending back in the wrong direction after they had a little bump about a month or so ago. You get rid of the coach, bring in a new coach, and try and make it happen. They're probably too far out now to make it this year, if we're being honest. But overall, like, what is this team? And that's the confusion in this moment. It's a team that has said that they want to be a selling club. They've done it successfully. And this coach, Luchi Gonzalez, has been super influential in that. So he's succeeded in that, right? If you're stating goals for the club, that is a success for him. Their other goals are to win MLS Cup. And that's the part that's confusing, Devang, is this is a team that on April 1st sold Thiago Santos, who's their starting central midfielder and the linchpin of their midfield, 2 weeks before the season started, and replaced him in July. If they're going to win MLS Cup, you don't sell that player. And he's not a young academy product that they sold for $15 million. They made $1 million, which is great. But if that's what you're doing, then you can't turn around and say, but we have a high expectation of what the product will look like on the field. Well, not if you're giving the tools to the coach to get that done. So I think there's a lot of confusion around what FC Dallas is trying to accomplish. And I don't know, when you look at who they're going to replace Luchi Gonzalez with, is it one of the names we're hearing rumored around this RSL job and whatnot, which is Pat Noonan and Landon Donovan, and maybe Ezra Hendrickson, whatever it is, Pablo Mastroeni. None of those guys, I don't think. Maybe Landon.
Not moving the needle for the most part, except for Landon.
And with Landon, I can understand. He's a big deal. It's Landon Donovan. My guess would be if he came to Dallas, which I don't think he will, and was successful, he may not actually stay there very long. So that's kind of a short-term fix anyway. But none of these other coaches inspire confidence. None of these other coaches have either had success in MLS, or if they are like Pablo Mascherini, there's a ton of drawbacks to them. But the big thing with youth development, if you want to be a selling club, is there has to be trust. And Luchi Gonzalez had established trust with families. And I think he had established trust where people felt like their kids would play. Kids felt like they would play for him if they were good enough. That's not always the case. I mean, we saw how long it took for Ayo Akinola to like finally sign and stay with TFC. Even when players don't have a ton of experience, they've got one foot out the door and are kind of looking for like what's their best case scenario. We saw it with Weston McKennie. And yeah, he lived in Germany as a kid. He kind of was always going to go there if he got the opportunity, but he didn't even stay with Dallas. So none of these things are a guarantee. It feels like Lucci was the right guy for this job. Obviously, it was frustrating this year, but the team is the team. Like, you look at it, I don't think they're underperforming heavily. I just don't think it's a great squad.
I have a hard time disagreeing with you here. I was wondering if, like, this is not a comp and the leagues are way different, but if the blueprint was almost like a BVB style of developing youngsters while being able to compete at the same time and not being a pushover in that regard, that is the ultimate goal for an outfit like this. Like, is that part their model, maybe?
I don't hate that, but Dortmund's won, like, one trophy.
Like, fair as well.
Klopp won the league. They went to a Champions League final. And since then, they've maybe won a cup. They haven't won a league. They haven't been past, I think, the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Like, even at that level, the biggest club in the world that does this. And when they sell, they replace guys with multi-million dollar signings, you know. They get rid of Sancho. They bring in May in. They still have other pieces that they can afford to bring in as well. They can't even compete in their league at this level. And then you look at MLS and at the big sides, Atlanta, Seattle at times, whatever, they've sold and they've struggled to replace those players. Like, it's hard to get players, new players to come in, right? Like, it's hard for them to settle. It's hard for you to build a style around them. It's hard for you to build a cohesive unit. If you're continually doing it, it is going to be tough. And there needs to be a spot where you do spend money to at least have like a core. So I look at Philly, who also, by the way, won Supporter Shield, sold their two best young players, and now they're seventh in the East. But they at least have Alejandro Bedoya. They have Andre Blake. They have Santos and Chibilko. They have Montero. They have a core that you can build around. Dallas doesn't have that outside of Matt Hedges. And that's been, I think, one of their issues. And I don't really think that has anything to do with the coach.
In case of emergency, break the glass. You could argue they did not need to break the glass at FC Dallas. I'm pretty sure they didn't need to. And they'll come to look back at this decision with some regret, unless they nail it with the hiring of the next guy and he actually sticks around for a while and they build something. But that remains to be seen. You mentioned Ayo Akinola, David. So that is a nice chance to talk about the big news in Toronto FC land, and of course it is not the games, because who cares at this point really what's happening. I believe they've lost Inter Miami, beat Nashville, but Sebastian Giovinco was in the crowd for the game over the weekend talking with Jozy Altidore. My mom called me straight up first thing. Did you see Seb at the game? I said I did. An unconfirmed report.
Is she a Seb fan?
Big Seb fan. She was really excited about this. But this unconfirmed report that made the waves, made the rounds, sorry, last week, it's not now just a report. I think it's like two sides that I can see why this would kind of make sense in terms for Seba. Where else is he going to play? I'm not sure how many options he really has at this point. He really loves Toronto. His family loves Toronto as well. And then if you look at it from Toronto FC's angle, and this is me being extremely cynical, but I think after how disastrous this year has been, there's nothing like a nice PR signing to win over the fans for a few weeks. And if I'm Bill Manning, I'm eyeing that up in terms of a nice feel-good story for about a week. So though it makes less sense overall, and I think this club has a problem right now in terms of relying too much on its good past, I get why this is being talked about. I'm curious what you think about it.
I agree with you. I also think it's not that big a deal, if that makes any sense. Like, he's not a difference maker. He's not going to get paid a bunch of money. And none of this will really matter. But to all the things, we're all talking about this, TFC's being somewhat relevant because of it. That's why they would do it, as you said. I also don't know his visa status. I don't know if he counts as a domestic or international player. If he counts as a domestic player because he was in Canada for long enough.
Well, wouldn't he be susceptible to re-entry as well then?
I don't know, because they sold him. So if you sell someone, yeah, maybe you do. I don't remember how the deal went down in the end in Saudi Arabia, because Victor Vasquez sort of left at a similar time. He was sold 100%.
That's right.
And I think that's how the Galaxy brought him back. But I don't remember about Seba. So whatever it is, I mean, no one else wants him. So it's not really going to matter. At most, you're giving up $50,000 in allocation or a draft pick to get that spot to get him back. So that's kind of how I feel. Am I too ambivalent?
No, I honestly, and like, let's put an old short man 11 out there. Let's get Sotelo Javinko playing up top. Let's find some other shorter guys. I feel like we should buy into this. Pause. And also, it'd be hilarious to watch some of those guys play together because it just doesn't really feel like it would work at all. But at this point, what does it matter? I think at this, at the time of this happening as well, I thought it was serendipitous that we had news of Justin Morrow announcing that this would be his last season. He will retire at the end of the campaign. But JMO, one of those guys, along with Seven and Josie, who were talking in the stands, that were part of those great years. And I think someone asked me, where does Justin Morrow fall on like your all good guys team or people you've dealt with in MLS or in soccer? And I'm like, he's the captain. Like of all the people I met, one of the best and one of the first guests on Come On You Reds, our Toronto FC podcast that started in its infancy many years ago, but he was willing to do that. So he'll always have a special place in my heart. But I teared up when I saw the news, Dave, and it was an end of an era.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're putting together, I don't know what you want to call it, but like your all-time TFC guys, I don't know if it's four, if it's two, it's six, whatever the number is. Where does he come in?
I think he's top five. I think outside of the big guys, like the superstar signings, I think Justin Morrow, Drew Moore, Fade Ashour, those, Clint Irwin for that time as well, those guys that had been around for a while and could insulate the stars and make it so it wasn't just the DPs and the also-rans. You had designated players and then really capable veterans that could step up on any given day. All of those defenders, all the MLS vets were so huge going forward after some disastrous postseason runs in the past when they had guys with no experience. So I think he's top five. And I think not just for the stuff on the field, but as a person, I think he's someone that you want to have in your organization going forward. And I think they'll be in competition with others because he's going to be a big commodity, I think.
Yeah, off the field, he's an all-time MLS great. On the field, he is as well. It's not a coincidence that he won the Supporters Shield in San Jose and then went to Toronto and they were successful. It's a position that, look at even like with Richie now, you put converted players in there. You try and get by on the cheap, whatever it is. And Justin Morrow was an elite left back. And when you had that in teams, it already gave you an advantage because other groups just didn't have that. And he was reliable and he could play both ways. So if you had a system where you needed him to play higher and be an attacking outlet, he could be that. If not, he was solid defensively. He was physical when he came inside and had to win headers or battle against center forwards. He was always that player. And so he's been huge, obviously part of that TFC dynasty, but part of Major League Soccer as a whole. My story about him is I was up covering TFC, I think their first MLS Cup, and you know, the training ground for us who are not part of the club, we're not allowed to park in the training ground. And so and my producer, who's my good friend here in Brooklyn, we were lugging our stuff in, I don't know, 0 degree weather out to the parking lot. And he drove by and picked us up and drove us down the street to our car.
Wow.
And it was super nice.
Class.
So yeah,
I've done that walk thousands of times, and there's like an airfield right beside it. So it is one of the windiest places, and in the winter, one of the coldest places. That's just the kind of guy he was, and he is. And I'm glad he'll get a victory lap as well and get his proper due in the waning days of the season. That's the TFC talk again on the field. They got to win, but we'll just leave it there. I think the other Canadian teams are worth talking about. Montreal with a massive 2-0 win over Chicago. First half, maybe one of the worst halves of soccer I've seen this year in general, just in terms of high impact chances. But I thought the second half, Romel Kyoto has not played often, but when he has played, he's scored some big goals for Montreal. They're in fifth now, David. Still really tight, though. Still really tight.
It is, but what gives me confidence out of this week was you have the loss to Nashville and this rebound. Every team, every week, a team's going to be 100% back out of the playoffs and 100% back in, right? Because that's how we are. We're reactionary. And the gap from 2 to 10, not just 4 to 7 or 5 to 8, it is the entire Eastern Conference outside of the Revs and FC Cincinnati and Toronto FC that is like in this battle. And so to see Montreal be able to stay level enough to bounce back gives me confidence that they can maintain this throughout the rest of the season. And they've been fun to watch when they're on. Georgie's pulling the strings, and this is exactly what you went and got him for. And all of the things that Wilfred Nancy has been able to do, the stability along the back line, which allows the fullbacks to get into the attack, which allows central midfielders to be more aggressive when they need to be. All of that has continued to build and grow. And it's really impressive. I think this is a playoff team, and it's MLS. You get in, you can do anything. We saw that from Nashville last year.
Couple things. I thought the Piet sub and having everyone be cool with that and super bought in is just a sign of what Wilf Nancy is doing with this club and how awesome the job he's done has been. And Sam Piet just being a team player and understanding that they had to change the game. And it worked quite well. And secondly, Mango Lussi Lapalainen is one of the greatest tweets I've ever had. And I thought it should have had more to.
I think I liked it. Did I not?
No, you did. You did, yeah. David. But it was a hollow victory. I was like, this is going to explode. This is the next big hit.
You thought you invented Lossies?
I did. That's Montreal Vancouver. Not a win, but in terms of maybe proving that the correct decision was made, this might have been one of those games that you can point to and say, sure, it was a draw against a very good Rapids team, but they went there and they played like they were equals. And they maybe not take it to is maybe a bit too extreme, but I thought in terms of game quality and like putting their fair effort in, I thought Vancouver was very good and maybe just good enough to make the playoffs themselves.
I don't know that I had the same reaction to you. I thought this was a good result for them to go to a good team in Colorado. I thought they got outplayed, but to get the result anyway is big.
Right.
I look at this team and I can't get around the fact that if they don't get enough from Cavallini, they're not going to win. They're not going to make the playoffs. Gold has done a ton for them. It's put Caicedo in better positions, Dahomey as well. You're getting the same performances now out of Javane Brown, whether it's the back three or the back four. All of that's working, and Brian White's done enough.
Brian White's making a nice YouTube mixtape with some of these finishes for Vancouver. Yeah.
But if you don't get anything... So Cavallini comes into this game, and he gets an opportunity where he's down the left side. It's basically 2-on-1. He can't decide if he wants to square it to the far post or try and curl it as a shot to the far post, and he just gets stuck in the middle. And like rips this shot across the box at nothing that no one can get to. And he had one or two other looks as well. And I'm not just knocking him. I understand he's coming off an injury, all these things, but he's their DP. Like he's the center forward. They need that. If they get 85% from him the rest of the way, this team's probably good enough to make the playoffs. If they don't, I don't think they have enough.
Different positions, but I watch Reynoso put the team on his back against the Galaxy from Minnesota and watch their DP and be like, yeah, that's maybe the kind of impact you're looking for from Lucas Cavallini from the goal standpoint.
But even Gold has done that. He just needs the little bit of help next to it. Like you're not asking for Cavallini. Last year, that's what you were asking for from Cavallini because they were bad and he wasn't able to do it. And you know what? That's fine. I actually thought he had a good year last year for what happened. He couldn't go to MLS's back. The team was a mess, whatever. I thought he still played fairly well. If he plays that way this year, they'd be a lock in for the playoffs.
Wowza. Running out of time for this segment quickly, David, I think Portland is probably maybe the most dangerous of those bottom Western teams if we kind of separate SKC and Seattle from the chase pack. And I think the Galaxy are floundering a bit. Minnesota, I mentioned with a big result, but Portland now is seeming to get on one of those familiar runs that we've seen them do in the past, where perhaps this is just a run straight through the playoffs.
Yeah. I again, when you talk about DPs and big name guys, I think they rely on Blanco and he's getting better and better every week as he gets healthier and healthier. And that's where they sit. There are deficiencies with this club that they haven't fixed. They don't have an elite center back and they're not able with the way Diego Chara has played this year, but actually anyway, because of who he's been partnered with, they're not able to dominate games. And so they lack balance. They give up opportunities or they can't create opportunities, whatever it is. But Sebastian Blanco is a top five player when he's on in this league and he's good enough to carry you all the way. We saw it last summer and we saw it in 2018. What time MLS Cup? Does that sound right?
Vaguely.
Atlanta? Yeah, I think that is right. And so that's where they stand right now. I'm not super impressed. I'm a little let down by Portland overall. They're aggressive. They spend a lot. The insistence on only relying on foreign signings, I think, has let them down. And when you look at the best clubs in MLS, and obviously the Revs are the case this year, but even when you look back at LAFC setting the record and Atlanta winning MLS Cup and Toronto and Seattle, they hit on draft picks and academy kids and MLS veterans and foreign signings and DPs. And it feels like Portland really only hits on the big foreign signings, which is great, but it's left them a little hollow in the middle of the roster.
Just taking a look at both races in both conferences, it's pretty wild. Like, there is some huge separation, especially in the East, but it is very jumbled. And don't look now, but Atlanta seems to be getting it together. Orlando opposite. Should be very exciting final few weeks of the season. When we come back, big week north of the border in Canada, Canadian Championship action, the big Toronto Derby, Toronto versus York United. We preview that coming up next. Welcome back to AFP. The Canadian Championship gets down to the nitty-gritty this week. The quarterfinals, we already know Forge is one team in the semifinals, but they'll be joined by four others. Toronto FC, York United, Cavalry versus Pacific, HFX Wanderers versus CF Montreal. But I think TFC York United is the big one on the docket. I know I've been asked many times who I'll be supporting, which I think is funny and like good. It's a good conversation to have. I think you could support both, which is what I believe. But for this game, controversially, I am going to be backing York United based on what I think this result would do for both of their seasons as well. Like, I think Toronto FC at this point now is looking at the Canadian Championship as like the last place of solace for them in a horrible year.
And you're coming out of this, that, and you're supporting York.
What I'm saying is, please, sir, could I finish? What I'm saying, though, is that York United now has fought their way into fourth in the playoffs. They look like they could be a playoff team, which I think would be a massive achievement for this club. And if they could be lifted by this result, that could help that push. Conversely, maybe too many games, they get fixture congestion, it could hamper them in the playoff chase. But I wonder, David, like, obviously Jimmy Brennan and company, they have to go all in for this game, because I think just what it means, it's larger than a playoff chase.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I agree with your points. I would potentially argue that this has a bigger on-field value for TFC, a bigger off-field value for York, right? If they beat TFC, it's a huge moment for the club. It's a big thing that you can celebrate. People will notice all of those things. But on the field, I think, as you said, they're a playoff team. So they're going to have a successful season, especially compared to the last two than what they've had, whether they win this game or not. And on the flip side, this is all TFC has to play for. If they could somehow steal a spot in the CCL for next year, that's something you can build towards if you're not going to tear everything down and rebuild. And I think if either Bill Manning or Ali Curtis are going to keep their job, one of them or both of them, whatever it is, I think they need the attraction of not a teardown. Because if it's a teardown, then why not restart?
What do you think the chances are, percentage-wise, that, and we can maybe handle it individually, that Ali comes back and that Bill comes back?
I would put it below 15% that Ali comes back, and I'd put it over 85% that Bill comes back.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me.
Yeah.
Which I think is, that's partly why I think I am supporting York United as well. Because I think perhaps, and I alluded to it in the first segment, like this, not obsession, but like the past was great and the core won some great things and the way things worked at the club were quite splendid. But I think they had to bottom out potentially to realize that it was time to move on and make some massive changes. But perhaps it takes what kind of happened to the Whitecaps to happen for them to really make the big changes that they need to make. And that's not to say don't let Seva come back, but like I wonder what is the next move, right? Like I don't think blowing it up is something that they're really focusing in on if the optics are to be believed, because I'm not seeing the actions of a blowing up management squad.
No, and even based off the signings, right? Soteldo's young, Pasuelo's in his prime, like, unless they sell those guys, you can't really blow it up because then you've just wasted money on them, but you're not going to be successful. So this clearly is with an eye towards staying competitive. And the best way to do that is to get a CCL spot for next year for this TFC team. So I think it's interesting. What do you think? I guess I wanted to ask, like, for someone who's not from Toronto, what does this whole thing mean and what's it going to look like?
Honestly, I think one of the bigger parts, and this will sound not mean, but like I feel like this will put York United literally on the map for some people who might not know they exist or might not know how good they are or what league they play in. Because I think a lot of the questions you get when the CPL is brought up is, what is the level, or like, what would you compare it to, or are they as good as MLS players? And if you can explain and say, like, on some level, there are some MLS caliber guys here for sure, and they can definitely go toe-to-toe in a one-off game. You kind of need them to show they can for York United. So I think in terms of a marketing campaign, and this goes to what you're saying about what this means off field, unfortunately, it also depends on what happens on the field. But if they can get something positive to build off of here, it's the potential for a big moment, a really big moment. And one of those moments that you can market the hell out of when you're trying to grow this club. Because I think, and this goes for any team in Toronto that's not one of the bigger clubs, one of the big four clubs, it's hard. It's really hard to make inroads here and get a foundation of support. But a win at BMO Field would be huge.
Yeah, it would be massive. I think even the MLS CPL is like the darling of this whole thing, but Cavalry Pacific is an awesome game. And we've just seen it in the league, and it was phenomenal to watch. Stunning goals, all that. It's been tight every time they've played this year, and I think they're probably the two favorites to meet in the final right now as well. And they match up so interestingly because you've just got two teams who know their identities really well and their opposite identities, right? So you've got a Pacific that wants to open up the field and create chances with the ball, but they do have legit match winners, you know, in Diaz up top and Campbell and all the pieces on the wing as well. And then on the flip side, you've got Forge, who kind of want to constrict the game and they want to keep numbers behind the ball, but they've got match winners and they rely on them. And they know at some point over the course of 90 minutes, they'll step up. So I think this has the potential for fireworks. And I think this has the potential for some heroes to be created where, you know, what we saw in the last game for Pacific, if they can carry that on, if Hurd can carry this forward, whoever it is, you know, then you start to look at someone who becomes a club legend because they led them to this semifinal or final, whatever it is, in this Canadian championship.
Forge, who many believe are still the class of the league. I know, David, you're still a massive fan of what they're doing. They are in CONCACAF action this week. They're already in the semifinals. Impossible to sleep on this team considering how much they've won, but I feel like we potentially are. They're not in action for the Canadian championship games this week, but never forget them.
No, you're right. I think Forge are still the favorites. And I think they're the favorites because they haven't taken a step back. And so, you know, they're until proven not, right? Like it's theirs to lose. Someone has to come take it from them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's too hard to repeat and repeat and repeat. Like it just means you cannot make a mistake over the course of these runs. And obviously Forge didn't do it the first 2 years, but I think Cavalry have maintained their level and obviously Pacific have raised their level where the possibility exists, probably the highest of what we've seen, that Forge are going to fall off. And that's not even a knock to them. I just think it's right. So hard to, in one off knockout games, not make a mistake over the course of 3 years.
A big week for sure in the Canadian Championship going down Wednesday. All the games are taking place 5 p.m., great start time on the East Coast. Wanderers, Montreal, then Toronto, York United at 7:30, and then the nightcap, Cavalry Pacific at 10 p.m. Should be a great Wednesday. We cast our gaze now to Europe, but with a focus still on North America. There are plenty of North American players playing in Europe, as we well know. We'll talk about Lille and their match with Lens being interrupted by fan violence. Again, I think Ligue 1's got some big issues in terms of fan control right now, and Fonzie continues to kill it at Bayern. But I haven't heard Matthew Hoppe's name in a while, David. I mean, the hype train was electric in the summer. We were talking Hoppe Nation, Hoppe Happy, and now kind of nothing. I thought he was going to Spurs as well, but he's at Mallorca, had a goal called offside. Overall, though, how did he look?
I was celebrating so hard on that goal. And I don't always. Like, yeah. I do, but not, like, physically. And I was just, I like, threw something. I was yelling. And then it got called back. He looked fine. They played behind the ball. They're not really going to have a ton of possession. He had, like, one or two nice little layoffs as well. He played as center forward, though, which I think is the right spot for him. And he came off the bench late in a game where they were overmatched by Villarreal. So it'll be exciting as he gets more minutes if that's a role he plays consistently, because he's got the speed to stretch a back line and be that one option. But I think he has the ideas to drop in and link up with people or turn and take defenders on. So it was a promising first game, and it'll be exciting to see, you know, what he can do going forward, because this is a club that, similar to what we're seeing with the Americans at Venezia, maybe they're not as overmatched, but there's not a ton of expectations that they belong at that level. So I actually think that gives space for a young player, or, you know, an American, where maybe Americans haven't gotten a ton of respect before. They actually, you know, can get opportunities to settle.
It's huge. Getting the opportunity to settle and then get minutes, I think, is what you saw work so well for Jonathan David, because it wasn't super great at the beginning, and then he found his footing, and obviously they went on to win the title. I mentioned that fan violence. I think some charges came down as you recorded this on Monday in terms of Lens and what happened with their match with Lille. I don't really have a solution to what is happening in terms of the fan violence in France with the supporters, but it feels like ultra supported France echoes some of those past eras around Europe where you heard of, like, horrible stories of violence in the stands. And I feel like this is that time in France for what has seemingly been over 5 years.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I don't know the exact root of what's going on right now. Do you? Any idea, like, is it something that's related to other things, or is it just frustration across the league?
I would imagine that this is also having to do with just general societal issues as well, and, like, things are bleeding over from the real life over to the game of soccer. But, like, already you had whatever idea you had of, like, hooligan culture, like, brotastic idiots, like, doing dumb shit. Just imagine that, I guess, times a million in this current environment we have. And I think they have their own elections coming up in France as well. So it's, like, especially powder keg-ish, I guess. But I just, it's interesting to me, like, the money involved with everything. And we talk about, like, the sums of money Leo Messi and these people are going to be making, and, like, all of, like, whatever, like, just things you can't even imagine how much wealth the Qatari fund is bestowing on the club. And, like, overall, where Leo Messi is going and traveling to play, it's like you just have these scenes of anarchy in the stands. So, like, isn't it a fitting kind of tribute to what our current situation is? Like, we have these people, the protected classes, and then everyone else just, like, on the outside edges, just kind of watching and trying to survive or stab each other at the same time.
Boom. Socialism here at Ask.
Anything else Euro-wise for the Americans? Josh Sargent, David? She's still doing well?
No, yeah. He still has to find his feet. It's fine. It's not super surprising.
That club might get relegated by December, so I don't know how good the feelings will be at Norwich.
Yeah, but hence playing time, right? As we just said. That's, they at least play real soccer compared to what Werder Bremen did last year, and obviously he would have dropped down with them this year. I don't really have a huge problem with that move. Brendan Aaronson scored again. I think it was man of the match for RB Salzburg. Nice. Or Red Bull Salzburg. I think they're actually allowed to be Red Bull.
The on the Jesse March, not to rain on your parade. Sorry.
No, but you're going to, so just do it. Just do it quick. Just pull the bandaid off if that's what you're going to do.
Jesse March under fire already?
It seems that way. I mean, the results look that way. Obviously, the insane game against Man City. It was a pretty insane game against Munich, too. I don't know. My understanding is that the Red Bull family exists in a very specific way, and he has a ton of value. The only thing is that Ralf Ragnick's not part of the group anymore, and he was the one who really brought Jesse under his wing, who guided him through, and I think he's the one who maybe wouldn't be affected by short-term results as much as other people, because he's been around for so long and has this clear identity. He's no longer part of this group. So the only thing that you'd have to worry about is that. When I look at this club, They're not as good as they were over the last 2 years. You lose Upamecano, and I think they can replace him, but they're worse defensively, and they haven't gotten better yet in the attack. They will. I believe Andre Silva and Szoboszlai will be good enough to replace and then maybe better what Timo Werner gave them 2 years ago, and then Sabitzer gave them last year, that they've lost both of them, but they're not there yet. And so just from a pure talent point of view, they're not as good as they were over the last 2 years. And it's tough then for Jesse Marsh to settle in and find his feet while also trying to overcome that. But it's still a super talented side, so you'd still expect some level of results.
What shout outs to Kyle Aaron and Atiba Hutchinson getting CL action in for Beşiktaş against BVB. Really tough opponent, but fun game. Of course,
Atiba Fonzie had Davies, a big chance blocked.
He did. He did. I thought... Good. I don't watch all of their games, but I thought it was interesting. They clapped off their fans at halftime as almost like, hey, we're trying our hardest out here kind of vibe, because Dortmund was bringing it to them constantly. But that was a fun game.
And they responded to that and played well. Can I just throw out there, because you brought it up, you know, players abroad. Haji Wright scored this week against Beşiktaş in the Turkish League. A 22-year-old American center forward, because we're everywhere, baby. We're everywhere.
I saw Mesut Ozil cleaning up a Diego Rossi blunder as well and for Fenerbahce. So we're getting everything coming up, Turkish Superliga. We'll talk about Fonzie actually in the mailbag. So that is that for our North American look at Europe. And a reminder, though. Yeah, go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say we'll do a full Champions League breakdown.
Exactly.
In a special segment.
If you subscribe to our Patreon, you get access to that, which we'll talk about. So for more Euro content, sign up. But next, to close up this show, Nikolai is back. He's Russian for one segment only, and he's taking charge of the mailbag coming up next.
Welcome back, and it's my time to shine now, as we are back for our favorite segment, Ask AFP. Switch it up a little bit today, guys. Thanks to everyone who sent their questions this week. If you did get the chance to send in your own question, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. Mark, thank you for asking your question on Justin Morrow. We already answered it. Thank you to David and Devang for your beautiful insight on Justin Morrow. I think he will definitely be missed at TFC. Our first question goes to Pete, and he asks, at what point does Alphonso Davies insist on leaving the left back position so he can be a more influential role up top? Or is it wise for him to maybe stay at left back with his club? Guys, what do you think? Should he leave Bayern as well in order to stop playing left back?
I guess the blueprint is he could do the Kimmich, right? Be seen. Mm-hmm. He's right. Seen a player right in and front of Philip him, kind Lam. Of. Right, there's a possibility to move and adapt, and I feel like the people at Bayern, for the most part, are pretty damn good at facilitating those moves. So if he was to be like, I want to play up front, I want to be a left winger predominantly, I want to be in that front three, I feel like Bayern wouldn't say, no, get out of here. I think they'd probably work with him on that and help him the best out of all the options he has. I don't know if he's... I guess I'm a bit torn on this. Like, I don't know if he has to move positions or can he maintain his dominance at left back? Like, does he have to change? I feel like the game of soccer now has made fullbacks that much more important than they used to be. So is it necessary for him to leave?
So this is something I think I actually brought this up on the show a year or so ago, because it's something I've been thinking about. And Devang, I think I echo everything you said. One is, he shouldn't leave Bayern no matter what, because he's there, he plays, it's a good club. And if he is good enough, or he should play full winger or whatever you want to call it, outside forward, whatever position, Bayern will make that move, because Bayern cares more about winning and being successful than they do anything else. And that's what they did with Kimmich. That's what they did with Lahm. Obviously, those were different because they went to defensive midfield, but they don't care. Like, if Alphonso Davies is in training showing that he's good enough, if he's better than Serge Gnabry and Leroy Sané and Thomas Müller, then they'll play him there. Like, they are one of the clubs that you want to be at for that scenario. So he shouldn't leave the club. Should he want to play that position is fascinating, because it's the question of, like, what's your peak? He's arguably the best left back in the world. So over the next few years, if he maintains this level or increases it, he would unarguably be the best left back in the world. That would be unprecedented for a Canadian, obviously. It would be a pretty damn successful career. Is that enough? Or do you then want to be that next guy? We talk about this all the time, I think, in basketball, where it's like, oh, well, he's not the guy. He needs his own team, right? James Harden had to leave so he could be the guy. Well, is that better than winning championships? Well, it's not his team. Like, there's all these different ways to comprehend this. None of us know how Alphonso Davies will. And it might be enough for him to maybe play higher up with Canada to show that he can, and then not with Bayern where he wins Champions Leagues. Like, there's no way to know. But I think it is fascinating, this idea that if he wants to, how does he go about getting there? Because he's already improved himself so much. You would have to think if that's his goal, he could talk to, as Devang said, the Bayern hierarchy about it, create a plan to get there and have things to work on, where he has shown if he has things to work on, he's going to get better at them because he's that smart. He's that good at this game. So it's a really interesting question, Pete, because I don't think we have an answer for it. And I don't think we have a ton of examples of it. Like, we don't have guys. I think him being Canadian changes things. If you're Brazilian and you go over and you're a fullback, you're Dani Alves, you go to Europe, you play fullback and you just do it well. And then you play for Brazil. There's no like expectation you're going to move to another position. But because Davies did it before he got to Europe and does it for Canada, there's kind of this half idea of like, well, could he do this for a Champions League team at this spot, game in and game out? And we don't have an answer to it.
I think there's one example here. It might be Trent Alexander-Arnold. He plays right back for a team that, like, he's influential in the play at right back, so that's fine. But then in England, he can't make the team, or he struggles to, or they play him in center mid because maybe that's his position that he needs to play in. So I feel like that kind of is a cool example. But, like, Alphonso, he has that place in the Canada team. So there's no, like, no matter what position he plays, he's always going to be okay.
And to Devang's point, and similar to what you said, what Trent Alexander-Arnold and Alphonso Davies do for their team is more than any fullback has ever done before. And the game at the highest level has reached such a specific point that you can't have weak spots, that they are elite players. Where it's like, if you look in the past, I can't even remember off the top of my head, but go look at like it was 06, right? The Milan-Liverpool comeback. Like, go look at those games and look at who some of the starting fullbacks were for some of the best teams. And a lot of times it wasn't out of position center back, or a center mid, or a player who you wouldn't put in the conversation with the top class players in the world. And it was kind of like an empty position. And it is still that way for a bunch of clubs, but at the peak 9 teams in the world, that's not the case.
And finally, Matt asks, and this is probably my favorite question of the day, if New England run away with the Supporters' Shield this season, where would you rank them in terms of first place teams in the last 5 years? And that's excluding playoff results, so I guess just regular season.
So right now, they are on pace to break the points record. If they break the points record, I think it becomes fairly self-explanatory. And I think right now they're on pace for 73 points. And LAFC has the record with 72 or 71.
Yeah.
That I'm not sure.
72.
72. And if you go back and you look at it.
71.
Yeah.
The year right. Before. So TFC set the record in 17 on 69. And then Red Bulls the next year had 71. And LAFC the next year had 72. And then obviously last year was a COVID affected year. So the numbers were nowhere near what they were before. And those are your 5 teams that you're talking about. I think this Revs team, this is a tough question to me.
it's a tough question because it's really hard to remove the playoff stuff from it, or like what happened to the other teams,
right?
That like, I, cause like that Red Bulls team led by Chris Armas, lost in the conference finals, and like, they're not especially memorable. In fact, I've almost forgot that this happened in 2018. So I almost hold their playoff problems against that regular season mark. But trying
but
to
do you hold
that,
it against LAFC?
A little less so. I think because of maybe still them being the sexy new guys and like being like, okay, like this is new attacking football at the bank, and like I'm super down. Perhaps that colored my glasses a bit, but I'm removing the Union from the equation because of last year. And also I think their PPG was a bit lower overall than some of the last few teams. I'll also take TFC out because I think I'm going to be a bit too biased about this. I think this Revs team, it would be the most impressive also because I think generally the league is the best it's been in terms of where it's at quality wise. So as the years go on, I think that's continued to be the case. And with that, it's harder to string these results together because the teams are getting better equally. Maybe you're spending more, a bit more equally. So I think in 2021 for the Revs to do this at the pace they're doing it, I think it would be the most impressive for me.
So I put LAFC number one because eye test still matters. And not only did they do it,
it was fun. It was fun. Yeah. It was good.
It is the most impressive soccer I've ever seen played in MLS and to get the results continuously, blah, blah, blah. So I put LAFC one. I'm going to get so much hate from Red Bulls fans for dropping theirs down. And I think part of what you're saying is right, Devang. I also think the other part is the press was very unique in it, in the way it operated. And so, you know, you had Tyler Adams in that team who was elite. You had a solid backline because you had Aaron Long and Tim Parker at their peak. Kamar Lawrence, who should have been Defender of the Year that year as well. Like, you had so much talent across that Red Bulls team, but it wasn't the attacking talent outside of BWP. And so they kind of get lost in the shuffle there. But the one thing with TFC, which, Devang, you can step yourself out, that's fair, but I'll take it, is that it was two straight years with them, almost three, right? Where they were the best team in 2016, even though they didn't win the Shield. Then they go to the final. They've got CCL runs in there as well. So they're competing on a ton of different fronts. And then they were able to do what they did in 2017. And when you look at the peak of Jovinko and Josie and Victor Vasquez and Michael Bradley, that might be as good of a core as any of these teams. Now, in 10 years, we might look back and say, well, Tejan ended up being one of the best players in CONCACAF, and he was on that team. And that might change my thought process a little. But where we stand right now, from what we've seen from Boo and Buxa and Hill and Tejan, they're not at that elite level of those top four. And so I think right now I would put it LAFC, TFC, probably Revs and Red Bull, if the Revs break the points record.
That TFC team was like the Monstars, but you wanted to cheer for them. Like the hilarious.
Well, you wanted
talented
to cheer for them. Because
fair, generally, though. This is the problem, though. I think this is why as well. Tough time letting go of the past and seeing those faces in the stands makes it even harder. Tough medicine, Gus. All right. That's my food for thought, chicken soup for the soul to end this episode. A reminder, if you are into European soccer and all that jazz, we are recording a bonus Patreon episode. You'll get all of that Euro content there. So join us on the Patreon. You also get access to the Discord where we're chatting footy all the time. We're also on Twitter at a football pod. As well, if you can give us a rating or review wherever you get this podcast, that would be lovely. It warms our hearts to read as well. So hit us up with that. And that's it. As always, a big thanks to producer extraordinaire Dylan on the ones and twos. And for Nick, David, and myself, thank you so much for listening to AFP. We'll talk to you next week.